Okay, we're here, everybody, on the sixth day of October. And it's a gorgeous day here. I hope it's lovely wherever you are. And our hearts go out to the people in North Carolina. It is a tragedy what happened in the way of a natural disaster there. And we also pray that those who have access to federal resources and state resources will cut them loose and make them available for those who are in such great need. They need FEMA, they need other agencies, and I know they're available. They were wonderful service agents to me and my family when we went through Hurricane Harvey a number of years ago. So it is a blessing to see the love that comes from your neighbors, from first responders, and from agencies that have been set up to be prepared and to be ready to help us as we go through these times. So my prayers are with everybody. Everybody going through this, and internationally as well, for the conflicts. I don't want to use a harder word than that because I don't want to put it there. They are conflicts that could become very serious, but right now they're tragical consequences costing the lives of many people and the convenience of life for many thousands of people. So our prayers are with them, and we will hold all of these situations in our hearts as we go through the blessing today. So, well, Nancy, welcome, and how are you?
We are wonderful, and I'm really glad you brought all of those things up because it really matters that we pull together and add these things in the world to the blessing, so thank you. But we're doing great here, enjoying a beautiful day. Just so happy to be here. Such a blessing, such a privilege. I'm so glad so many of us are together today. It's going to be wonderful. What a message, the heart. I mean, it's where all the power is. So I'm so excited. We're continuing with this teaching, and I don't think anybody else taught it like he did. You know, did anybody tell us about the heart like Yeshua did? The Sacred Heart and the way he taught us about it?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we just really weren't told about it in the Old Testament. And actually, I kind of want to start on that because I think that we need to make it clear, first of all, what we're talking about. You know, it actually is a relatively new idea against a background of at least 8,000 years of various approaches to religion and spirituality. And I don't want to limit our human existence here to only 8,000 years because there's no question that it would have been part of our life as the human community because it's essentially what makes us unique and special. And there's a great likelihood that the pyramids are older than we think they are, and possibly even as old as 20,000 years. It's still a subject that's up for a bit of controversy and debate, and we might not want to practice their religion, but the fact is it was very oriented toward acknowledging the soul of people, even though they preserved the bodies, as they mummified and preserved the bodies. It was only so that the soul would have a place to come back home to. They recognized that at death, the soul had some other place to go to perhaps be healed, refurbished, reset on a new destiny and would return. They had the full expectation that the souls would return, and most especially those that had functioned in a leadership position. So the idea that Yeshua will return was not a new one. That doesn't take anything away from the fact, from its profundity and its specialness. But I just want to iterate that it's part of our human understanding that not the whole person that we are was born on this earth or shall live forever on this earth, but it's a place that provided our temple for the duration of our living, and that temple should be honored. In fact, Yeshua referred to his body specifically as the temple that would be destroyed, and 3 days later, it would be put back together again. Well, that was the crucifixion and the resurrection he was referring to ahead of the event. So, when he speaks of the temple, occasionally it is toward a religious edifice, but mostly it's in reference to the body that houses a soul. And in that temple, there are special facilities provided for the nourishment of the soul, the welcoming of the soul, the empowerment of the soul. And that's really centered around this place within us that we call the Sacred Heart, because it was placed there to be our connection in life, an internal altar, if you will, where the soul and God connect, where they commune, where they take instruction. Well, we, the soul, take instruction, and the heavenly creator of all existence speaks. We go there, we listen, either in meditation or we speak reverently in prayer, and there's a communion that occurs between our Father in heaven and our presence on this earth. We're here to do his will. We're here to be his heir on this earth. He created the earth, and then he bequeathed it to his children for us to reside, manage, and elevate whatever we find to be present or needed in the life and the existence of our human community. But not just that, we were given stewardship of all of nature and husbandry of all the animals to care for them, to ensure their well-being and their beneficial life in the order of creation. Now, he created each species to be of its own kind, to breed with its own kind, to socialize and care for its own kind. He was loving of every species and every member of every species. So be assured that your beloved pet, your puppy dog and your kitty cat and your birds and whatever else you have cherished and brought into your home and your family, those are loved. They're very loved and they're cared for and will be kept in the arms of love for the whole of their life and into future existence. Where God is concerned, there is no end of life. And contrary to the limitations of science, life does not begin in the womb and end in the grave. actually science has never been able to define even yet what life is. I'm serious. I'm serious. Go online or pick up a really, really good book by a serious and authentic researcher, writer, and you'll find there is no definition yet. And it's kind of wonderful, I think, that life precedes what we call life and supersedes beyond what we call life. And while it's here, it needs to have a very special place for connecting with us because it's not mortal. Our bodies are mortal, and our Father, our Heavenly Father, our Creator, even told us that you were created from the earth, and to earth you will return. He was talking about our body. Okay, now, that leads me to a very important distinction that needs to be made about the difference between our emotional body and the Sacred Heart. We associate our heart with emotions. You know, we'll say, I love you, I love you, or this, or whoever, with all my heart. Or we say, the things that he said broke my heart. Or I'm so discouraged, my heart is bleeding. My friends, it could be true that those comments belong to your heart, but for the most part, they belong to your emotional body. So we want to talk about what that is. And there's a trend today, which is actually quite valuable and I think important in our self-discovery and self-management, called emotional intelligence. I think that's something really important to have a little more mastery over, because sometimes we say things and don't mean it, or we say things we mean, but we don't manage our words very well, and we cause a disruption in a relationship that really did not need to happen. We could have managed our feelings and protected the feelings of other people a little better than we did. Largely, I'm not a fan of this thing we call political correctness, because it was actually created to invade the world of politics and censorship. And I don't believe in that. I really don't. But on the other hand, I do believe it's important to be kind and to be aware that we can say things that unnecessarily hurt or offend another person. And it's time we grew up. You know, it's not cute to be a kid and say mean things. Kids can get away with it because they're so doggone cute and nobody takes it seriously what they say. And if they do, well, mom takes them aside and kind of helps them understand it's not a good thing what they said. So there's two sides to that story, as there are to many, many venues of education. We do have an emotional body, and it's not inside our physical body. It's not where the heart is. It's not this special core of our being. Our emotional body has actually been created through living and existing socially with other people or in the environment, in the exterior world. You know, we learn that things hurt, or we learn that some things just feel so doggone good. It's fun to go playing in the rain sometimes on a warm summer's day. And, you know, we just get wet and giggly and we play with each other, and that feels good. It doesn't feel so good when we're mad at the neighbor on a winter day and we turn on the hose with cold water and we spray them and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were there," but that's a lie. You know, you were mad at them and did a naughty thing. Well, we've got to have more control of that emotional body. It's there. And we get into conflicts and fricasses at the office. And we'll say naughty things just to make a point. And then we have to live with them or climb out of them or correct them some way or the other. And the emotional body is also the body that really, really desires things, whether it's ice cream or the affections of another person. We really want something, and we go for it. Well, you know, it's always good to think twice. And that's what the Old Testament is talking about when it makes lists of the heart. It's talking about, it's not talking about the Sacred Heart. That hadn't even been mentioned until the life of Yeshua. And the first person he ever attributed it to was his mother. And that is an endearing point of appreciation we have for her and her love for humanity. It's a very central part of the protocol and celebration of the rosary. So it's a sacred event to pray the rosary. But let's get back just a minute. I want to go back to the Old Testament where that was not what they were talking about. No, they were talking about temptations like David had for Bathsheba. And to watch out for your temptations and your yearnings and your love or your greed. Greed was included in that very definitely because it can be the undoing of us and the unwillingness for us to really manage ourselves. It's also very, very much a part of, well, I would say the preliminary side to serious addiction. Really, serious addiction includes the body, where the body has become dependent upon the use and need for a substance. But it largely begins with a love for serotonin or dopamine or some of the other wonderful hormones our body can exude when we're in a happy phase, a loving phase, you know, or we just remember points in childhood or points we had on a beach on vacation, and it brings us back there. So it can be a very loving recollection that we encounter and celebrate in meditation. When we have a healthy emotional body, life is just better. And so we include that in our celebration of the heart, but it's not what the Sacred Heart is. It's not. The Sacred Heart was imprinted at the moment of your conception. And it's even attributed to that in Scripture, in the book of Jeremiah, who says, "I knew you in the womb, and I named you. You were created from the beginning, from the Sacred Heart, which is the unity of your being, and then the first cells of your bodily creation were heart cells. There was nothing but heart cells for a couple of weeks. Nothing. I mean, this is science. This is not just me professing a spiritual belief. This is science. Every organ of your body was first designated by the heart. And then it began to become unique, to function as it came to function, as a special organ in your body. As it began to function as a special organ of the body, in the beginning, your heart managed it. But it became too complex because the heart had its own special function that it needed to develop. It needed to manage your life, your consciousness, help you create your purpose and your goals in living and your connection as a soul. Well, in addition to the cardiovascular system that it would manage for the whole of your life. But it also was developing your higher consciousness. And that's what we want to talk about today, because that's what will be with you, not only for the duration of your life, but I think you're going to pack it in your last suitcase and take it with you, because that's what you will review in heaven. I made a comment about heaven last time that I think I need to revise a little bit. My comment was, I don't think heaven is all just, angels and golden streets and sweet places we go. I really still don't think that. I think it's much, much more than that. I think it's a place we go to meet up together and to meet with angels who are therapeutic geniuses who bring us back to all that we are, where we can recover our full identity as a soul. And we can reunite and become all that we are, shake off the dust for things we might have regretted in our life and our living, and refurbish our life and our living so that we can make decisions about what we would like to do next. What I don't believe about heaven is that only a few, very few special souls stay there. I think most of us go on to do the Father's work. Maybe not back to this earth. We might go with the Father to create a new earth. That's kind of what I'm hoping for myself. And if you do stay there because the angels remain, the saints remain, because we need their guidance. The people who are still living on earth need the guidance of elevated souls whose goal and chosen function in life is to remain on high ground, for the guidance of those who are still doing the work in earthly places. And maybe many earths in many places. Yeshua said, in my Father's house are many mansions. Many mansions. And he wasn't talking about mansions that belong to rich people on this earth. He was talking about God's mansion. We're talking about big spaces, maybe entire solar systems, not just planets. But we're not alone, my friends. And I'm going to find, I saved almost all of Billy Graham's lessons, preaching, sermons. Well, that's the word I wanted, sermons, over the years. And some are just priceless. Where he talks about how he's going to preach on other planets. I thought that was just amazing. But you know what? If I'm not mistaken, he preached that sermon in Korea. He did a lot of work in Korea and Southeast Asia, I think a little bit in Southwest Asia as well, and drew many enormous crowds but he could express the liberty of that belief among Asians who really actually did believe in reincarnation. That idea has been pretty much snuffed out until maybe the last century of the Western world. And many people were considered heretics or blasphemers for even believing in it. But it's actually, there's a place they didn't leave out of the New Testament. And I'm not thinking about it right now. It was one of the apostles was asking if John was, or was it, I forget, I'll have to check it up to get the exact, it was asking, I believe it was if John was Elijah. And he said, no, that was, and who was that? I think it, well, I have to, but it was one of the other apostles. He said, it was one of the other apostles was that. So, I mean, that was clearly a statement of having been here before, of having followed the path before. And chances are, he just pulled the apostles together. You know, he called all of the apostles. They weren't looking for him. He was looking for them. And he looked and looked till he found every one of them. And that included Judas, except according to his communications to me, he and Judas grew up together. They were friends. Yeshua was born into a pretty well-off family, and so was Judas. So there was a lot of material temptation and orientation that Judas had from the time he was a little boy, and I think that affected his thinking. And no doubt he's been forgiven and put back into service somewhere where he can have a new start in living and service to the Father. I really believe in the power and transcending love of God. And I do believe hell is a real place, but it's not a forever place. It's where people go who just can't forgive, or they can't get forgiven. Their crimes were so heinous, so horrible. They're just not going to be forgiven right now. So they got to go wait it out, and they got to live with other people who can't forgive or be forgiven. And that's probably going to feel a lot like burning in fire. In fact, that's another comment from Dr. Graham. He talked about this too. He said it's not like being thrown in a furnace. He said it's like burning inside, because when you can't forgive or be forgiven, you're going to burn like the fires of hell that some people misrepresent. And he said that's where people go who can't forgive or be forgiven. So I said, I really call you now, while it's not too late, forgive and seek forgiveness. And he remembered a time I presented to all of you too, where a man came to Yeshua to seek a miracle. And Yeshua said, yes, I will give that to you, but first, go and ask forgiveness from your brother. He used that as leverage to get the man to go and ask forgiveness for his brother. It's a very important thing. And we're going to talk about forgiveness in a special section later on. But I think today we're just going to move right into our lesson about the heart. I just really felt a calling to get you into what we are talking about and what we're not talking about, so that we don't have a confusion about it, and you don't have a confusion about what references I'm making today. I'm trying to find my
I think it starts on page 181 of the newer, the most recent publication.
It does, Nancy, and I don't have a book in front of me. How's that for irony? Okay.
That's okay.
I'm trying to find the, here we go. I sent myself an invitation to the blessing today, so I found it. Okay. It's
awesome.
Important that I come to. Okay, we are reading from chapter 7, The Heart is Your Higher Intelligence. And we're kind of moving toward the midpoint of the book. And there's going to be a little preamble here, and then we're going to talk about the first dimension of the heart. The one that arrived on the day of your conception, your union with God. You were designated to be human. You were designated to be here. All right, so here we go. I'm reading now from Yeshua. It is imperative that man acknowledge the heart's higher intelligence, for the mind alone cannot tell him who he is. And genetic intelligence is a lethal weapon when combined with the technological potentials in the world today. By comparison to the mind, the heart is a function of intelligence based on the ultimate in simplicity and synchronicity. Its matrix is a synergistic center of awareness, which perceives a unified relationship with all that is. The levels of intelligence available to mankind could be summarized as survival, logic, synchronicity, and love. All four are present in the lives of each person, although a man will focus on the one that assists him the most. Let's go back. Let's just review that. I didn't want to move too fast because we're not into the Sacred Heart yet. This is the different levels of intelligence available to mankind could be summarized as survival, logic, synchronicity, and love. Okay. Well, survival could be, where do I get the money to buy dinner for my kids? Okay. That's survival. Or how do I get a better lock on the door to keep everyone secure at night? Another point of survival. Then we get into logic. Well, we've got to solve problems. And there's usually a sequence to understanding what the problem is and then how to address it and unravel it. That's logic. Then there's synchronicity. That's where you feel your way through things, like, you know, I've got a feeling that I just need to look over there, or I need to go to this other place. They're hiring over there. I heard from John that they have openings there that might fit me. Okay, that's synchronicity. It's a form of intelligence, knowing where to go and feeling your way there. And then, of course, the highest form of intelligence is love. Love for yourself, love for others. You can say, how can I fulfill myself better? How can I serve others more? How can I be the child of God I was created to be? How can I make God proud of me? Okay. And how can I love my family more? Or the ones I've committed my life to, who've been so good to me, how can I love them more? Because their survival is important for mine. Okay. So these are, I just wanted, now that was me talking, but we're moving so fast through this, and you didn't have time to take a break and go think through all these things. All right. All four of these are present. We're back to Yeshua. All four are present in the lives of each person, although a man will focus on the one that assists him the most. If he knows little about the heart's intelligence or the greater intelligence of love, he will emphasize one of the other possibilities. Genetic intelligence is well equipped to sustain physical life and to interact emotionally with the environment. Mental intelligence can formulate reports and engineer rocket ships. Neither, however, is equipped to give meaning to life or to establish a connection with divinity. Attempts to apply them beyond their means have led to destructive misconceptions. The mind cannot figure out divinity. And rather than being frustrated, now this is me talking, it decides, well, I need to either be agnostic or atheistic because this is just too much for my mind to figure out. So that's what happens when you resort only to that. Getting back to Yeshua, ultimately, there is one infinite and connected intelligence. That is the one spirit. Perhaps this could be referred to as the great cosmic mind, although the term consciousness would more accurately describe its function and availability to all of life. A mind, precisely speaking, is composed of at least minimal structure due to circuitry, self-contained integrations, and proprietary applications. Only the heart's simplicity can comprehend infinity and connect heaven with earth in a meaningful way. From a center of equilibrium, much like the hub of a wheel, the heart unfolds its awareness in seven concentric rings of understanding, each succeeding dimension of intelligence builds upon and completes the one or ones coming before. The first dimension of intelligence is unity. This is the primary awareness that there is but one God, one power, which is the unifying force in all of life. This awareness affirms the oneness of spirit, reveals the wisdom of the ages, and provides insight into the larger order of things. Through respect for unity, one comes to understand the patterns of cause and effect that permeate all of existence. The intelligence of the heart reveals cause and effect to be a great deal more than linear consequence. An action that is good for the whole may be repaid in an entirely different manner, yet in a way that is also good for the receiver. Where unity is supreme, there is nothing more adaptable than goodness. Just as water seeks its level, so too goodness seeks its application. God can redirect into some form of goodness even actions that were intended for harm. Unity is also the source of intelligence, for it grants the ability to integrate knowledge and to correctly define priorities. That is the beginning of wisdom. Integration is the principle of successful thinking and living. Without priorities, there can be no focus in life and no values. This translates into higher intelligence when you understand that there are core issues in everyone's life relating to dominance. Dominance is always an issue in the world. Competition hinges on the problem of dominance, often resulting in business or military conflict. In personal lives, there are endless battles for position. These things are easy to see, but unfortunately, competition for dominance is not limited to the obvious. Food cravings and other addictive compulsions are simply competing with natural functions and striving for dominance. The list is endless. Until one allows God to be the unifying force in life, there is nothing else capable of ending the chaos of competition. All addictions and compulsions are the result of false dominances and surrogate powers. Perhaps the greatest dominance of all is that of manufactured identities to which a person himself has suspended his rights. Such identities are very addictive. It is false dominance that has led you astray. Burned your time, your hopes, your dreams, and your love. Without false dominance, you would have infinite wisdom at your fingertips and the time in which to use it. In the presence of unity, which is God, the One, the Supreme, you have all the power you need to fulfill your life and existence. He suggested that we meditate on the principle of unity when we are in the heart and declare that God is the one and only power that may determine our lives. The more we open ourselves to this awareness, the less other things will have the ability to control us. God's power will then translate to us through the heart that we may have command of our lives. And that ends the passage for today. That was on pages 182 through 183 in the last version of Love Without End. We will open our board for discussion or comment or anyone who would like to ask for a blessing. So, Nancy, I'll turn it over to you.
Hi. Wow, isn't that wonderful? That last part too, Glenda, I mean, the more we open to this awareness, the less other things will have the ability to control us. And, you know, the mind controls us and the world controls us. And it's so amazing that he says that, you know, there's one infinite and connected intelligence. I think about all those words, one, infinite, connected, and we're part of it. We are part of that.
Exactly.
We are, you know, and why we get all caught up and don't have faith. You know, I mean, he says another place in the book where, you know, there has to be a point where our confidence in the foundation of existence and this idea of unity, God as one, is greater than our anxiety. And that, you know, that structure is the thing that's blocking that. And And even what you just read about, you know, cravings and dominance, I think about people, I was taught as a kid, you know, I'm unworthy. And that was an internal thing that I sort of, you know, was a dominating idea, right? That you just, you'll never, you know, and so it's, and those are even worse because they're hidden. You don't see them. But, yeah, this is like important to really get unity because, everything unfolds from there. Everything. I mean, you, and it, isn't it simple though? I mean,
it,
God
it's
is
so
the one
simple.
Power.
And this is, this feeds back on what I really emphasized from an earlier start in this chapter, where I said, in God, we are all one.
Yes.
That's where we find our oneness. And so if we would seek to be empathetic with others, I would say, pray for them first. Just pray for them. It does something absolutely amazing to consciousness. No matter how stressed you are about that person, pray for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your prayer.
Yeah, don't behave like a, don't behave like a child. Yeah.
Pray for them. Your prayer will actually take you to God, and in the place of God, that's where you find your oneness. It may still be that they're not behaving perfectly well in the world, but you can understand with compassion, and you can formulate a wiser, more beneficial relationship to your observations and how you want to participate with it.
Yeah.
Without judgment, you know?
Yeah, it goes back to what you were saying about, you know, using bad language or speaking ugly or, you know, or just, you know, behaving really like not who you really are. It's, but you remember what we all started together on the Blessed Life. The very first one was, you know, keep the spirit simple, you know, blessed are the or simple in spirit, you know, that's about all of these ideas of structure and hierarchy and just, it's amazing how that takes you right back to the face of God. So, yeah, pretty wonderful. So this is exciting. And there are so many places in the book. Everybody knows it. They've read it. Also in Keys of Yeshua, Jenya was bringing up the temple last week, restoring the temple. You know, these are not just intelligences, but bodies of consciousness within us. So there's lots of places for us to make the connections that, you know, may hit home harder. But I can open a call if you'd like me to.
Well, pray for my Gemma. I don't know why she's as ill as she is, but pray for my Gemma and my sister.
Oh, well, I do. Oh, of course. And you don't know what's wrong?
She lost all her weight. All of it.
As she's
kind of burnt. And there's... I see the doctor tomorrow.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Good. I pray for her. And that the doctor is knowledgeable and wise and knows exactly what to do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Okay, Glenda, we have Stormy. Hi, Stormy. How are you today?
I'm doing well. While you have been speaking, Glenda, I've been blessing the soul of America. And when I say the soul of America, I say North, Central, and South, the one soul of the Americas.
Thank you, Stormy.
Oh.
That's a blessing that's very needed.
Yes, there's not just North, there's Central and South, just the one soul of this continent, of all of us. You know, thousands of years ago, from Central to Canada, Native Americans traveled and commerced between each other a long time ago. We have had
a very long time ago.
And I want to include that in not just to the specifically, you know, I've been praying for the soul of the United States of America, but also wanted to include this week all of America's. You inspired me to include that this week as well as last week what I was doing also. So thank you for this opportunity that you provide all of us to connect with each other on such an intimate occasion.
You're so welcome, Stormy. And yes, there have been powerful and amazing civilizations on the three continents. Well, it's actually two continents, but one connecting link through Central. Amazing civilizations that have been here for thousands of years. We, the residents of the United States, are the newcomers. And I pray that we inherit the legacy well and wisely and move forward into a better future than anything we've known in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stormy. Thank you, Stormy, for making that connection. And bless you today. The lines are open. So anyone in the community that has a question, a blessing request, any clarity about the message today or something they've experienced with their heart, we're here for a little bit more, I would think. Just feel free to jump on.
Okay. Well, actually, I think it might be a good time to just prepare everyone for a wonderful, amazing, powerful blessing, because it's going to be a blessing that brings about unity, which is what we really need in a highly conflicted world. And there's not just conflict in one place. It is pretty much global right now. There are some nice little vest pockets of peace, like New Zealand. Oh, I'd like to teleport there right now. It'd be so nice, especially with spring coming on. There are some lovely places that are peaceful and beckoning to the soul. And I kind of frequently go there in my meditations because they can be a harbinger, a vision for unity in other parts of the world that are not blessed with that right now. But I just want to call your attention to the fact that on a very high level, we are always blessed with unity. It's there, but it's there in God. Without God, we're not going to find it. We're just not. And we're going to be really confounded being on the street level where rubber meets the road kind of reality that doesn't have easy answers and always or almost always has traffic jams. So this is what most people are living through, my friends. And this is why I'm writing my new book, which I will be getting back to full time this week. And that is The Only Way Out Is Up. I think there's probably no one of our intelligences more that describe that we're not going to find it down here. It doesn't really do any good to point fingers, to make judgments. That's why God really forbade us to make judgments. He said, don't do it. He's the only one that can, because he's the only one that can do it from a point of unity, where any judgment actually makes creative sense. It's not so much a condemnation, it's a correction in the direction of betterment. That's how he judges. That's how he does it. And Let's be there as much as we can. And we go there in our blessing for at least one brief moment. It might take us a little while to unfold, to receive and absorb blessings that are coming. We live in a very, very multi-layered reality. And on top of that, a multi-layered universe, which allows us at times to receive the blessing we need almost instantly. And then other times, well, other things have to be moved around first. There's a traffic jam in front of us and behind us, and we can't turn that car around very easily. Now, if it's a situation that is important to the destiny of humanity, God can actually break the waters of the Red Sea so that the Israelites could pass through. He can open doors that would have been locked. He could stop bullets that would have fired, because it's important to the destiny that he has planned and mentioned and provided and supports. It's just, he will not break his own laws, never. And so he has to wait until complications we or others have created to settle them out and bring your blessings to you. He always has blessings for you. They will come. But sometimes we need to be patient. And while we're being patient for the full realization of a blessing, do our part. Ready ourselves for the receiving. Do our part in the work of compassion. Do our part in the work of understanding and tolerance and forgiveness, without which nothing will happen. Yeshua said to the one who asked for a miracle, I'll give it to you after you go and ask your brother's forgiveness. How about that? So, perhaps God is often waiting for us to forgive one another or seek forgiveness from them. If we recite the Lord's Prayer, we'll find that even before we ask for our daily bread, we offer our prayer for forgiveness. Forgive us our debts as we forgive those who have debts against us. In other words, you get that board cleared, and you can really understand the importance of that if you understand the real meaning of hell. It's about being locked up with others who can't forgive or be forgiven, and that is hell. And God cannot reach you there. But the minute you forgive, the minute you receive forgiveness, the doors open and you leave. You go to heaven then, where then you can be put into therapy and rejuvenation and restoration of who you are. Hell doesn't have to be forever. It's just that there are some people who are going to be very, very stubborn about either not forgiving or receiving forgiveness, because by golly, I was justified what I did. I was right and they were wrong, and there's no way I'm going to forgive. No way I'm going to ask their forgiveness. I'll just live in hell. Okay? And there are people like that. But most people will come to their senses and realize what it takes to get out. to unlock the door. And you can do that for yourself right now, here. That's what Dr. Graham said almost every time after a sermon with his call to the altar, because he knew the importance of it. He said, I care about the safety of your soul. I care about where you're going. I care that you're in union with God. Okay, well, so much for that. Let's get ready for a blessing. And I didn't mean to make light of what Dr. Graham said, but you get the point. Let's get on with our blessing. And I want you to move around. That's the first thing I want you to do. I want you to shake your arms. Just shake them. Shake all that energy you might have stored up in your arms that went up to your shoulders. Your shoulders are probably about the tightest point in your body. And after that, probably your lower back and your pelvic region would be extremely tight because you sit on it and you bear a lot of weight on it. You bend over and you lift on it. So yeah, your pelvic region's going to be kind of cramped because it's used to bearing all that weight and doing those vital movements. But your shoulders, this is where you get a massage and your therapist touches you, you go, ah, that's what I came for. You know, it all breaks loose. Well, you can do a lot of that yourself with windmills, with your arms. You need to rotate them. The rotator cuff is called the rotator cuff for a very good reason. It responds to the rotation of your arms, okay? And then it responds also to the rotation of your neck. Turn your neck to your right shoulder and then turn it as far as you can to your left shoulder. And while you're doing this, I want you to bend your head forward a little bit and then move your head back a little bit. Okay. And stand if you can. Okay. Those who can't stand, you can still extend your legs. What we're going to do is we're going to get some movement going in your feet and legs. If you can't stand, then move your feet. Wiggle your toes. Get any form of movement going that's available to you. And bend at your knees. We really, really overlook, I think, many of us are, I know I do, is the work that my knees do during the day, you know. And the interesting thing that many psychic therapists, Louise Hay for one, projected into the knee, is that our knees are usually as locked and fixated as we're inflexible. And as we have judgments, it flows to the knees. And so get those knees bending, all right? And I would say if you can stand and lean against the table and stretch the back of your legs, because that gets flow moving through the backside of your knees. And while you're there, swing a little bit to the left and to the right, because you want that flow coming up into your low back. And then from there, up your spine, into your neck. Squunch your shoulders up towards your chin. Just squunch them up so you can feel your shoulders squeezing on your neck. And now drop them down. That feel good? I thought so. Okay, push them up again. And then down. Okay. Now, we're going to take a very, very deep breath. Inhale, extremely deep. And exhale. Now, let's go deeper. And inhale through your nose. so you can take it up to your sinuses. Pull your diaphragm down, but hold your sinuses up and now blow it out. That's going to stretch and compress your rib cage. Very important thing to do because it is what holds and draws in your breath of life. Let's do that again. As you breathe in through your nose, pull it up to your sinuses and stretch your diaphragm down so you get the largest amount of distance between your sinuses and your low diaphragm. And hold the fullness of breath in for a couple of seconds. And now blow it out. And feel your shoulders drop on that. Did you feel that? Yeah, that's a good feeling. All right. And now what we're going to do is just get into our mindful breath. It's a gentle breath, normal breath, but you're going to be mindful of it. So you take your mind off of worries in the world, off of problems you need to be blessed, off of where you will be an hour from now. Just be here right now. I want you to exhale to the count of four. Your four, not mine. Just count to four. Now pause to the count of four. Let that draw a line like around a box where you pause. And then draw up a breath to the count of four. Okay? Into your chest, or as you would normally breathe, and pause again to the count of four, so that you hold that in-breath. Feel yourself relax. Okay, now let's do it again. Exhale to the count of four. Pause to the count of four. Inhale to the count of four. And pause to the count of four. There's a wisdom in this. You continue to do what I set you doing and I'll talk. There's a wisdom in this you need to master. And that is the wisdom of the pause between all thoughts, all actions, all received blessings, all asked for needs. I'm sure that you've been taught. If you have something to say that might be a little controversial, pause before you say it. That's your moment of empathy. And then after you say it, pause. To give respect to the receiver, to receive in a respectful way what you offered. And then bring the response back into yourself to the count of four and pause again to take accountability of the whole cycle you set in motion. This could be a proposal you make at work for construction or correction. This could be planting a seed. You got to plant it and don't disturb it until it shows its little head. And at that time, you make sure that it's got some sunshine and water. And you pause and you give it time to grow because you can't do the growing for it. In all of life, there is this cycle. And the great mystics of the ancient world who were very close to life always preached and promoted to their people that the miracle happens in the pause. It doesn't happen in what you say or do or in what is said or done back to you. It happens in both phases of the pause. So I want to really reinforce this understanding. It's a powerful one. It can change your life. Now, you continue right now in your blessing. Be ready to receive. Be ready to hold and accept your blessing. And I will ask a prayer of Yeshua. Dear Yeshua, Lord of life, Son of God, and brother to us all, we ask that you would strengthen our unity and our spirit of community and brotherhood, that we may address the world with a spirit of unity, of forgiveness, and actually asking forgiveness for our own moments of disruption, that we may all know that our presence and our actions are not perfect, and yet in God we are perfect. And in our source, we are all one. There are many things we have to work out on this earth, and I ask that you help us work out those issues. Pardon me. Work out those issues with the least amount of damage to anyone, with the least amount of destructive consequence in anything we set in motion, in our personal life, in our social life, in our spiritual life. We ask that you hear the prayers of each person praying as I pray to you, and of each person in this world praying for peace, recovery, survival, or greater abundance, that they may implement the actions of goodness they envision. We ask that you be with the poor and give them food. We ask that you send rescue to those who are needy and need help. We ask that you be present in areas of conflict, that there may be a presence of peace in the hearts of enough that peace may become the new contagion. We ask that you care for the children and that you preserve their innocence and their beauty and potential in life, for they are our future and they are precious unto God. Let them be precious unto us as well. We thank you for your glorious life, who has set an example for each one of us, for your love, for your tireless help, and your forgiveness whenever we ask for it. Walk with us and show us the way to become the best person we can be, to arrive at our best and most optimal goals in life, that we each may bring peace to the world, that we each may provide wisdom of direction to others and right choices for our collective destiny. We ask this in your holy name, now and forever. Amen. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me? Let us offer the blessing.
Amen. Amen. And amen. God bless you. Richly, richly. And I wish you a very blessed week. Now, what you do next is I want you to lie down. Wherever is your choice. Sofa, bed, floor, mat, yard, you choose. But be horizontal so that no part of your physical body is in a dominant position. It is your soul, your heart, that is in a dominant position. Connecting with God and allow the blessings to flow. You may not see them immediately, but they will be etched upon your being, your life, and they will come forth in the hours, the days, or even the weeks ahead. Bye-bye from now. And I ask for many blessings for you.